a Cinco de Mayo party in Birmingham for Auburn baseball and a new ranking. We all love rankings. Hey, Zach's not here. That's not Zach. That's Lindsay. That's baseball's Lindsay Crosby. I'm Brad. This is a brand new Village Vice. Lindsay, do you like that? Like, we've just, like, I love that Zach's given you that moniker. He's baseball's Lindsay Crosby. College baseball, professional baseball, minor league, major league. Doesn't really matter. You're baseball's Lindsay Crosby.
I literally have run into people, Atlanta Airport, professional games, college games, minor league games, and I've had people say, it's baseball's Lindsay Crosby. And I'm like, holy crap, like, this is a thing.
Yeah.
And like, that is, it's in the pantheon of Zach's numerous branding things that have stuck for players, for people. I mean, who can forget the baby goat?
Hank Brown? Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
Nobody, what backup, what third string quarterback's gotten that much attention ever in college football other than Zach calling him the baby goat? So I love that it's baseball's Lindsay Crosby. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for filling in today. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to talk a lot of baseball. For everybody who has been complaining about the lack of barn baseball shows, number one, we're with you. Yeah. But number two, we're with you today. And this is going to be almost like a de facto barn baseball long segment coming up in just a bit. I've never been a part of a rooftop Cinco de Mayo party while calling a baseball game.
That's fun.
For folks who aren't familiar, we'll get into that here in just a little bit. But first, it's list season, and ESPN has decided to fill some time by ranking every offseason college football Power Four team. They're going to tell you why they think, who they think, the entertainment, the same sports journalists, Lindsay, the same sports journalists who give you pro wrestling now on ESPN, and I'm not anti-pro wrestling, but I know what it is, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to tell you who had the best and worst off seasons and where they rank Auburn. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. The way you positioned that, I think, was wrong because they're not telling you what they think. They're telling you this is the truth. Like, that's way that ESPN presents this stuff, is that this is an unimpeachable ranking. And I think that context matters.
Yeah, that's a very good point. They are, of course, the worldwide leader, the authority, and no one else can question what they do.
No.
So they have said that among SEC teams, Auburn had the 13th best.
Sorry, spit take. I was shocked.
Or in other words, the fourth worst offseason. Now, let me go into why. I'm going to give you some things, okay?
Okay.
Losing in a vacuum, losing Cam Coleman and Jay Crawford and Malik Blockton and Kay and Lee and Eric Singleton Jr. by themselves without adding anything else. Like, if you give me a plate of food and then you take five good items off the plate, I'm going to go hungry, okay? But that's not what happens in the offseason. You replace those players.
Can we get back to the plate metaphor real quick?
Yeah, sure.
How many different foods do you have on your plate at one time? Is this like a Thanksgiving meal? Like, I'm trying to figure out. I've never made dinner at home with five different things on the plate. I'm trying to figure this out.
Yeah, four would be like a really good, four would be a really solid.
A robust meal plate at home.
Yeah.
Right. You know, a main protein, a couple sides, maybe a salad. And I'm
That's in a different vessel. The salad's not on the plate as it is.
I'm trying to get to five somehow. Yeah. I'm like, how does this, like, I have the salad in a separate bowl. Yeah. And then I have the dessert separate at the end because I want the temperature to be correct. I'm like, how do you get to five? But I guess Thanksgiving. You know,
I might do four in a breakfast. I might do like eggs and bacon and a biscuit and fruit.
Oh, buddy, there are no rules at breakfast. There are no rules at breakfast.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. All right, let's go back to this.
Sorry.
All right. Your point. So what went right? Let's give them, first of all, what went right.
Okay.
Like Penn State and Oklahoma State, Alex Golish brought in the best of his previous roster with him to Auburn. And he goes into Byron Brown's accolades. And then it says, despite the return of Jeremiah Cobb, the Tigers bolstered their running back depth. So that's great. Obviously, mentioned, Bryson Washington, Nekai Davenport, Tay Meadows, and even bringing in the new offensive lineman that they brought in. biggest coaching move, Auburn 83rd in school. This is my biggest pet peeve. I'm going to get into this right now. One of my biggest pet peeves in how we talk about sports. Auburn ranks 83rd in scoring since the start of the 2020 season. A prolonged program it hopes to fix with the hiring of Alex Golish as head coach. What in the flying flip does being 83rd in offense since the start of the 2020 season have to do with the 2026 season or the 25-6 offseason? What does that do with anything?
I think I see what they're trying to do here, right? They're trying to establish that this is not a coaching issue because we've had three coaches in that span. They're trying to establish that this is an organizational issue, that there is something fundamentally wrong with the idea of offense at Auburn, which is dumb. There's so much turnover in college. I honestly hate when somebody's like, oh, yeah. Like Auburn is 0-10 against this team in the last 20 years. And I'm like,
yeah.
It's not the same players.
Right.
Like every one of those is pretty much a unique and independent thing from the others. This is a weird stat that is like, we're just going to dog Auburn because we can dog Auburn here. Right.
Yeah. And I think you're onto it right there. So to quote the head coach, I don't like super care that they're 83rd in offense since the start of the 2020 season. What about since the start of the 2019 season, start of the 2017 season? Start of the 23 season. Like, what a weird starting point. It's not 5 years. It's not 10 years. It's 6 years. So in the last six seasons, 83rd. Who cares? Moving on. Okay. Biggest coaching move. So not only does Alex Golish come in, he retained DJ Durkin, defensive coordinator, brought over top assistants from the South Florida staff, including Joel Gordon and Cody Burns. And then also hired former Tennessee defensive coordinator Tim Banks, Broyles Award finalist. Let me ask you a question. If it had been many other schools who brought in a head coach with the acumen of Alex Golish and retained who many believe is a top-tier defensive coordinator and brought in another couple of experienced SEC coordinators on the defensive side and brought in a 3,000-yard passer, 1,000-yard rusher, his quarterback. Tell me how many other schools we would write articles about saying they had the fourth worst offseason in the SEC.
I kind of feel like this all comes back to Lee Corso. We wouldn't let Lee Corso kill Abby to wear his head. And so because of that, this is now an organ, like, this is an institutional bias against Auburn because of that.
Because of that?
Because of that. There's no other real explanation for, yes, you lost very important players, which I want to point out. The first player that they list is not Cam Coleman. It's Keldrick Falk.
Right.
But, you know, the write-up doesn't really kind of mention that. But,
yeah.
Anyway, but, yeah, it's really like, hey, this team wasn't good last year.
Yeah.
And so there's no way really for us to say they had a great offseason when they're starting from a bad place, which is dumb. It's a dumb way to look at this.
Yeah. The most, I think the line that holds the most credibility is, you know, that didn't remove the sting from the transfer exits. Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton Jr., Malik Blockton, Jay Crawford, Kay and Lee. Yeah. That's a legitimate, like, those players were talented. Mm-hmm. Auburn didn't win more than it lost with them, but they're talented. All right? There's no debt. Nobody's ever denied that they're talented. The next line is just weird again, though. It says, NFL draft declarations from Falk and Lou, both of whom had eligibility in 2026, marked another pair of off-season blows. Now, I read the rest of these. They don't do that with anybody else.
I was about to say, does Georgia say that?
No, they don't do that with draft-eligible players who choose to go to the draft. That is purposeful framing for a narrative. You know what? This really isn't that bad, all things considered. How do we make them a little bit lower? Well, Keldrick Falk and Connor Liu, let's turn a positive into a negative. That's how we can do it. We can turn a positive into a negative.
You had a guy drafted in the first round. That's so terrible for your program.
It's awful. It's a terrible offseason to have a center and an edge rusher, two key positions, drafted, and they're underclassmen that get drafted. What a terrible thing for your program. Again, they don't do that for anybody else. All right, anyway, so Auburn's 13th. Had a worse offseason than Florida. Had a worse offseason than South Carolina. Had a worse offseason than Missouri and Kentucky. Had a worse offseason than Kentucky, Lindsey. A worse offseason than Kentucky. Would you rather be Auburn or Kentucky?
I mean, Kentucky has bourbon, but
would you rather be Auburn or South Carolina?
Oh, definitely Auburn.
Would you rather be Auburn? South Carolina
baseball is terrible. I'd rather be Auburn. I do
want to be Auburn or Vandy.
Auburn.
Okay.
I do want to point out in the Florida thing, when they the biggest coaching move, they talk about John Summerall coming by. They didn't mention in there, in that little blurb, that he's a dork. And I do think that that matters. I mean, in the era of recruiting, if you listen to the things he says, his press conferences, yeah, his off-the-cuff stuff, he's a dork. And I'm just like, at a certain point, I think we like the fact that Alex Golesh is who he is. And yeah, the way that he talks, he's very no-nonsense. He's very, we're going to come in here, we're going to run the crap out of the ball. I'm self-censoring here. You know, we're going to...
Yeah.
He's all about ball, and John Summerall's just a dork. And I think that should matter. You should lose points for that in this criteria. But right, they like Florida because they can put, was it Albert? They can put Albert's head on. And so because yeah, of that, there you go.
There you go. So your stance is that the basis for these rankings is the ease of which they let them use the head for game day.
Yes. Like, listen, right, listen. Right. They also went one time and they gave Corso a live gator to hold.
Yeah,
on
set. That's true. Like, they do a lot Auburn's, with that.
Auburn's never gone like, hey, here's a little baby tiger, or here's, we're going to bring one of the eagles out for you. Like, yeah, and let you put the eagle on your arm. They've never done that. And I understand because of that. That's why ESPN hates
I don't Auburn. Trust those people around the Eagles. Herb Street will let his dog loose and it'll just be a big, big problem. Listen, moving on.
Can we, no. Can we talk about the dog real quick?
Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm sorry. No, right. Listen. Bandit's right behind me. Bandit's right behind me. I love dogs.
Okay.
He moved on from that first dog very quickly. And I don't think enough people talk about that. The dog passed away tragically. Lovely. Yeah. It was a lovely, lovely situation.
Sure.
And I'm like, oh man, this is like, there was tributes from schools and stuff.
Yeah.
And then like a week or two later, he had a different dog with him at a thing. And I'm like, I know you have like four of these, man. Like, I know you have a lot, but you can't make your dog into a thing and then almost immediately just move on from the dog. And we all have to act like it's normal. There should be a mourning period here. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm done. Sorry.
I love you for that.
It's bothered me so much. Hey, listen, if you don't like this, if yeah, you're bothered by this right here, at Z Blackerby on social media, let me know about it.
Yeah, tweet Lindsey at Z Blackerby. That's amazing. Yes. Oh, that's good. He's baseball's Lindsey Crosby at hatemail.com. Precision Tune Auto Care of Opelika, ladies and gentlemen. Let's be honest, most people don't switch mechanics unless something went wrong. So if you fired your last shop or, you know, man, you just don't trust where you're going now, Precision Tune Auto Care of Opelika is worth the look. They're going to show you the problem. They're not going to sell you on something that's there or not. You know, photos, videos, clear explanation. Basically, you stay in control. All right? No pressure, just answers. They're trusted right here in the community in Opelika, and they're focused on long-term vehicle care, not just quick fixes. So if you're looking for a shop you can actually trust, Precision Tune Auto Care of Opelika, and be sure to mention Village Vice, mention the barn when you go in. Real hospitality, real car care. It's Precision Tune Auto Care of Opelika. Okay, Lindsey, Auburn baseball beat UAB 10-2 last night in Birmingham. And the head coach wasn't thrilled because they got a little sloppy. They let up. What does it say about the ceiling of this team? And we're in May now. Mm-hmm. What does it say about the ceiling of this team when you can beat a team 10-2 in their city? It's Auburn City too, but you get the point.
Yeah.
And the head coach is not real thrilled with it.
That the ceiling of this team, like you mentioned, is so incredibly high, right? This yeah, is I've had people say, like, this the pitching of this team is so good that this could be an Omaha squad.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest takeaway that I kind of have is, yes, they won 10-2, but it, you could argue it was a little bit closer than the score lit up. It felt like there was moments when they could have done a little more and it maybe didn't quite happen.
Yeah. Maybe until the fifth. I thought the fifth busted it open.
Yeah. Late. Like they picked it up late, but in the first couple innings, they had two runs. It's an RBI ground out in the second. I remember it was a single. It was a single after an
single,
error.
Yeah.
He has a single by Bub. But it felt like they could have done more than that. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with the team, but it's just you get down. This is the stretch run. This is it. This is where you've got to be before postseason play. And you can't, not that this was a slow start, but you can't afford slow starts starting in 2 weeks. You can't get into these holes.
Yeah. It's weird again. UAB in both games, they used a different pitcher every inning. It's
that late season, midweek bullpen game thing.
Yeah. All right. So Griffin Graves goes four innings. He gives up three hits, one walk. What do you see his role being? Let's say, you still got one more midweek at Jack State next week. So let's look beyond the regular season. What do you think he molds into once postseason rolls around?
I will say I was a little surprised that there wasn't more strikeouts from Griffin Graves. I've thought his stuff was good, and it just felt like, he got five ground balls. If I had that right, I remember watching this.
Yeah.
I want to say it was five ground balls. It feels like he's going to be, we need to stabilize something here. We need to kind of, I'm not going to say we're in trouble here, but we need a veteran to come in and settle things down. I feel like that's going to be his role.
Yeah.
I do like the fact that he broke 50 pitches because I feel like, that's something where you can get him closer and closer to if you need another starter during the tournament or, if you need another guy who can give length, he's there. And I know that I think it was Samford. He had three strikeouts in two innings or something. But I do wish that there were a little more swing and miss, a little bit more whiff and strikeouts.
Yeah. All right. Guevara, another home run, three RBIs. Bub drove in three on a couple of hits. He said he was really focused on going the other way more, and he did with his two hits. Logan Gregorio got a couple of at-bats. He didn't get a hit. He struck out, but at least he's back in there. And Brandon McCrane got three more hits last night. I think he's 500 or maybe just under. I think he was 5-for-12 last weekend against Texas A&M and then three hits last night. So last four games, he's right around the 500 mark. Offensive thoughts last night and then going – and I know Braves were playing at a similar time anyway last night.
It was later. So. It was later. Okay. Yeah.
I got most of Auburn in. Okay. Offensive thoughts then last night coming out of A&M and then looking ahead to Mississippi State.
Eric Guevara, I think, has been the surprising catalyst to me. And I know that you won the weekend without him being really good at A&M. I think he had two hits all weekend. But it feels like as he goes, this team goes. And I can't really quantify that. I know we only had two hits last night. He drove in three, like you said. But it feels like when his spot comes up, that's a moment where Auburn can break a game open.
Yeah.
And he's been really good in past weeks. He struggled over the weekend in A&M. But I feel like that's important. And then I feel like we're still kind of a little unsettled when it comes to leadoff. They've rotated through options, obviously. I still want to figure out that. I want to figure out who's the best leadoff hitter for this team. Because I feel like we still don't know.
That's interesting. Because Mason got on base three more times last night. Yeah. He's walking more.
Hitting two walks.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel to me like... I mean, he did it. He got it done.
Yeah.
But I just keep going back to early season when you like, and it feels like you're missing something at leadoff right now. I think McCrane's great.
Yeah.
It feels like you're missing something at leadoff right now, and I can't quite put a finger on it. And I know that's not a very popular opinion, but
yeah, it doesn't help that Bristol's like 170 in league play.
Yeah.
And he got the night off last night because he just, you know, maybe he needs a night to, I mean, they put him in defensively late, but he didn't get it bad in the ball game. Just offensively, he's kind of caught in between. If he's bunting, it's not successful. If he's swinging away, it's not successful. We know it's there. Mm-hmm. He's just in one of those times right now. Doesn't mean he's not a good player. It just means, you know, he's struggling a little bit right now. So I don't know. I have really liked it. It's interesting because we can have different opinions and it's fine.
Yeah.
I think Mason at 6'6 is an imposing figure for a guy to face to start a ball game. He takes up the whole batter's box and he's got a great mentality. He's got the, like we asked him after the Florida game, after I guess the two homer Florida game, what's your approach in the leadoff? He's like, just try to get on first base.
Yeah. Just like,
well, my goodness. You're a leadoff hitter, and we didn't know it. He's just trying to get on first base.
Yeah.
However you can do it. But I don't know. We'll see coming down the stretch. Mississippi State scored 21 runs last night. They got 12 in the first inning against Nichols. Nichols and Dimes, baby.
I was about to say, I was like Nichols? Like, I don't even know her. I don't know what we're doing here.
It's pennies last night. So now you go Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Pitching is really interesting.
Yes.
Because Alvarez threw 110-plus Saturday in College Station. I don't think you bring him back 2 days short rest to pitch tomorrow against Mississippi State. So what do you do there? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's – the good news is you have more starters than you need, but having that push to Saturday and then cutting it short – part of me wonders, would the move have been to take Griffin Graves instead of starting him on Tuesday and pushing him to Thursday? Like, part of me wonders, was that the right decision? I'm sure that they know what they're going to do, but yeah, it doesn't, you can't bring him up after that kind of lengthy outing. You're probably going to have to just bump some other people up, you know, bump Jake up, but it's not.
But again, Jake also pitched Saturday.
He pitched Saturday. I know you have to move him. I think you move him to Friday, but you can't move anybody. Saturday to Thursday is a big jump.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Jake as the veteran can manage that if you do that.
Yeah.
He can handle, we're going to jump you really far forward.
He didn't throw 100 pitches. I know that. Didn't throw 100.
I was about to say, it felt like they pulled him maybe a little bit earlier than they... Yeah. Than what he could have done. And what so about, it's possible that was the plan.
Let me throw a wild idea.
I love these.
What if it's LJ Cormier?
Ooh.
What if he's been the freshman his first start?
On the road at state. He's been giving some length. He did against Oklahoma. He did like 3 1/3. I want to go. Yeah.
He went 3 against Stanford, I think, too, didn't he? Or did he just go 2 against Samford?
He went 2 against Samford.
Okay.
He also went 3 against Arkansas as well. So, like, you've been getting a little bit of length out of him. I think his high in pitches is just under 50 this year. But he's been in the high 40s multiple times.
Yeah.
So maybe that's something where – and if you think about the pattern for Auburn has always been you get to the first two games with, like, 4 pitchers used, and then you have the whole staff available for game 3. Maybe this is just the opposite. Like, hey, we're going to hope – that games 2 and 3 still go like that.
Yeah.
And then game 1, we're going to, hey, give the ball to Cormier, let him throw, push him to 50 pitches.
Yeah.
And then we're going to go with some relievers after him. Maybe you double, maybe you only threw Graves 2 innings because you want to bring him back and get, you know, and get an inning or 2 out of him on Thursday. Like, that could be, because Graves probably could have done more than 2. It was 2, right?
He went more than 2. He went 4, I think. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm sorry. I was thinking something else. Yeah. That's me.
But, I mean, can you use Graves? Nah, but you got the Jack State game lingering out there. And you also have this. So if you don't bump guys up on 2 days short rest, and I just don't think you do.
Yeah.
So if you start somebody other than your normal starters, that means now you have 4 starters for 2 games, essentially.
Yeah.
Because
now double them up. And
right. For Friday, Saturday, now you have Alvarez and Marciano and Sanders and Petrovic and Hetzler and whoever else. But, yeah. I mean, those four starters for those two games. And you're going to have to move them up a day next week.
Yeah,
because next week against Georgia is also Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So if you have guys pitch on Friday, now they might pitch on Thursday. Like
it's you move a, them up a day a, this week and a day yeah, next week.
Yeah, that and like logistically, this is a tough stretch, but it's an important stretch. So they're sitting at 14 wins right now in conference. How many wins must they get to host? Must they get to be a national seed? Ooh, conference wins of the six to go.
That's a good question. 14 and 10 now. The good news is you do have some, the road ones count more. Like that's people don't like to hear that. The road ones count more. Winning two
to the committee
in A&M helps. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, RPI wise, it helps. Road wins win count more in RPI.
Yeah.
You're at 14 now.
Yeah.
I'm going to say
really good series wins.
Yep. You've had a fantastic streak of schedule.
Yep.
I'm going to say to be like, you need to win minimum two, but okay. I think that to be safe, you need to go 3-3 in these two series to be safe
as a national seed
to lock in and to know that you are a national seed.
Yeah.
I think if you can get to, I mean, if you can get to 17 conference wins with an RPI that is as of this morning, number four in the country.
Yeah.
And if you win, if you win two against State on the road, you'll probably jump from 4-3. And so it's like, okay.
Well, yeah, if you win two at State, then you only need one against Georgia to get to 17.
Yeah. And if you're 17 with a top three or four RPI, there's no way you're not a national seed. I just don't see it.
So you could win one at State, win two against Georgia, still hit that number.
Same outcome.
Still hit that number. And I think you're in the discussion even with 16.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're in the conversation, but I think if you want to be sure that you are a national seed, like if you want to let Rhett Hobart start planning all the fun stuff for regionals and maybe even supers.
Yeah.
If you get to 17, Rhett can go ahead and start paying deposits and stuff. Like you're good to go at that point. It's just like, you know, do you want to have to at least worry about it, or do you just want to know you're good? Because if you get to 17, I think the other thing too is you don't want the SEC tournament to matter. Like it sounds dumb. You just don't want it to have to matter at all. Because
does it?
Auburn's never really been great in Hoover. Like you don't want to have
beat.
It can't hurt you.
Okay.
But I do feel like there have been teams in the past that were maybe on the outside looking in for whatever next accomplishment was, and then they had a Hoover run, and they just happened to then be the one that was picked, especially if they knock off somebody. Like if somebody knocks off Texas or Georgia at the tournament, who was on the bubble to either be a host or whatever, that's probably going to push them up a level. So I do think that you just don't want it to matter.
Okay. I love the event. Yeah. I love the event. I want Auburn to win it. I want to be there all week. Like I love the SEC baseball tournament. I've not known it to matter a lot in terms of hosting and this, that, or the other. But it can't really hurt you.
Yeah,
right.
It can't really hurt you, but
it
can help if you need the help. I just don't want to be in that position.
Correct. No, I'm with you there. I'd rather just get to 17 or 18 in the regular season and then
be done. Yeah.
Like you said, start planning. So
yeah.
If you got short-term rentals in the Auburn Opelika area, start booking them.
Yes.
Start booking them for people. Okay. Good stuff.
Go ahead, order your catering for your tailgate and all that kind of stuff. You know, go ahead and do that if we get 17, 18 wins.
That's what I think we need. I think that's the next step for Auburn baseball fans is massive tailgating for regionals and super regionals.
I'd love to find a way to set the parking up where we can just kind of block off. Like, obviously, we have the street part and everything, but just being able to block off that lot or a good part of that lot and set that up, and have people do their own thing or have the company that comes in that does all the white tents for football. They don't pay us. I'm not going to say their names, but have them come in and set up, tailgates for regionals and supers. Like, this is a Auburn's a baseball school, and I want it to look like that to people like ESPN, so they give us a little bit more respect.
Would love to see it. Would love to see motorhomes in for the baseball weekends, and it's just good to say it's more than one game. It's a whole weekend full. So, all right. Thanks very much, Lindsay, for doing this. Appreciate it very much. Check out buyauburn.com. Auburn businesses, for Auburn fans. Auburn fans for Auburn businesses. Check it out at buyauburn.com. And if you own a business, let us know that you'd like to be involved, because we can get you started at a little discount at buyauburn.com. Remember, until next time, everyone has vices. Make sure Village Vice is one of yours.